This is the Comstock Report podcast. We are strong advocates for the American family farm and your top source for the agriculture markets.
Hey everybody, thanks for joining us. I'm Marlon Bowling with you, and welcome back to the Comstock Channel. I'm joined by Eric Ralph of Comstock Investments, and we're going to take a look at how we finished up this past week. That was an adventure as we came across the finish line, that's for sure. Be sure to like this video and subscribe to it so we can let you know when we have new episodes out there, and tell others about it too. Be sure and share this video. Eric, let's start out by talking about one of the big news items on Friday, and that actually was after the market closed on Friday. It was the new cattle on feed report that came out, and I wanted to have you walk through those numbers and see what that means, because some people are taking it different ways. It maybe raised a few eyebrows, but given where the market has been lately, I don't know what that means now moving forward. So explain that, can you?
Yeah. So, you know, on the surface, the cattle on feed report looks bullish. You had 101% on feed number versus a 102 estimate. You had 88 placed versus a 93 estimate. That's the big one when you miss that placement number by 5%. And then you had 86 marketed versus an estimate of 88. So the first rub is placements were quite a bit lower than what the average trade guess was, 93 versus 88. That's a big number of cattle, and that would normally be quite bullish, especially just looking at the actual versus the estimate. 5% is a big miss. So that's the initial take. However, I think you have to kind of slow down a little, look back at what's happened over the past week. Just this week, May feeder cattle have rallied $8 per hundred. So I wonder how much of this was dialed in. And of course, the conspiracy theorists will all say, oh, the report was leaked. But when you had the estimates coming out to start the week, as early as Monday, we started seeing some estimates that were quite bullish on the surface again, down in these areas that we're talking about. And so everybody kind of went, whoa, this will be a big deal, you know. And as the estimates continue to come in, we continue to see low placement numbers. And so the market's getting bought up. And that's what we saw this week. Even after finishing Friday a little lower in the feeder cattle, you still close the week out $8 higher than where we started. So some of this is likely baked in, but it should still be supportive to start the week. We'll just have to wait and see.
So how does the futures move in the cattle complex over this past week compared to what happened out there in the cash markets then?
The futures move was exponentially larger than what we saw in the cash market. So the feeder cattle cash market was basically soft the first 3 days of the week, and then we saw a couple days of recovery. But still, you ended the week with index levels about $3 lower, and that's on a seven-day moving average. So feeder cattle cash was softer this week than what we saw last week. Fed cattle cash came in steady in the Southern Plains at 182 live, and we didn't see any trade until today. I need to add that. We didn't see any Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday trade. Sometimes we'll even see some on Monday. None of that happened. So we didn't see any trade until Friday, but what we saw was steady in the Southern Plains at 182 live, and then $2 lower for the most part in the North, whether dressed or live. So we're talking 292 dressed, 183 live. That kind of trade is what we saw in the North, both Iowa and Nebraska. So definitely not the movement in the real world that we saw on the board this week, but we also didn't see the collapse in the cash market over the few weeks prior that we saw on the board. So the board was having to make up a little bit of ground here.
Well, for the technicians out there, the 62% retracement level, it almost held right to the dollar, didn't it?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And on a closing basis, it was really close. There was some significant stuff that went on from a technical standpoint, especially when you start to look at longer term retracements on some of these deferred contracts where you haven't had the contracts on the board for a long time. You do a life of contract retracement. There was reasons technicians bought this up on this last dip.
Now, that being said, that's going to make for an interesting open come Monday morning. We don't trade overnight trade in the livestock, but on the hogs, you know, it looked like they were pretty toppy there for a while. Maybe now not so much. What do you think here?
This was another case where if you got a little crafty in your line drawing, there was some significant stuff that went on, especially in some of these deferred contracts. And I'm talking, you know, anything from summer months through next summer, honestly. the hogs actually hit 62 and 76% retracement levels on a lot of these charts, and 50-day moving averages on some key charts. I think I was looking at the June 24 yesterday, and we just went down, touched the 50-day, held, had a nice rebound yesterday, and then a bunch of follow-through buying today. So you can tell this is a market that's being heavily technically traded. In addition to, you know, I'm hearing reports all over the place, I can't find pigs. I actually have people buying paper because they can't buy pigs. So there's a story out there that's not really catching a lot of traction, and I don't know how big of a deal it'll be or how localized it is, but you know, time will tell. But it is interesting that people are doing that.
What's the deal with that? Why would that be?
I don't know. I mean, I'm hearing about, you know, sow liquidation and things like that. So maybe we're starting to see the impacts of that already. There's a lot of barns for sale. If you know the places to look online, you can buy hog barns all over the country for little or nothing. And so there's been a lot of people exit the industry, and you got to think that a lot of those were sow operators.
Well, let's take a look at the grain sector here as we wrapped up the week here on Friday. The big move was in the soybean trade. That kind of came out of left field. What happened there that shook up the market so much?
Well, there again, it was a lot of technical. And when you have a large fund position in a market like we have had in the grains for quite some time, and unfortunately, it's a large short position, but nevertheless, it's a large fund position. They're more technically driven than your commercials and obviously than producers are. They're, you know, those folks are looking for profitable levels. They're looking for certain price points and things of that nature, whereas funds will just trade the charts. And we got eerily close to February lows in the soybeans. We got to those lows in the soybean oil, and then finally we caught some footing. So now how much follow through can we get? I think it's going to depend on Monday's crop progress report. Around here, we're soaked. There's nothing rolling. There's reports of Ohio River Valley, you know, talking about Ohio, Indiana, down through the Delta. A lot of that is too wet. Can't do anything. So now every week that goes by and we have less than impressive planting percentages, the crop progress report surprises us with some of these low numbers. That's really going to underpin this market. And then we could see some kind of a planting season rally, which maybe we didn't expect. But again, it's going to be how widespread is that? And that'll a lot depend on how big these systems are that move through in the next round of rains.
Historically, it's hard to get an extended rally on a wet planting season, usually dry. Would have more punch over the long term, wouldn't it?
Yeah, although not as sharp. That's one thing I will say about a wet planting rally is you'll get a sharp rally. It just won't be sustained. You know, we saw that in 19 and then ended up that was warranted and we should have kept higher prices because we had a lot of prevent plant acres. But that was an exceptional year. And I think everybody will remember that one for a lifetime. But the wet rallies can be sharp and need to be taken advantage of. What I would say also is the strength that we're seeing now in the grains is being coupled with improving basis in a lot of areas. And that I think is a migrating basis from prime cattle feeding country that's moving into the belt and into the northern plains. Here locally, I've had clients selling 470 cash corn today based off the May board. So that means that they're juicing this thing 35 cents somewhere in that range, 30 to 35, you know, even though they're not posting it, they're willing to pay it.
Well, and that kind of brings us back to something you and I had talked about a few days ago, and that was related to the livestock producers out there in the country. We wondered, considering how historically low these grains are on the charts here over the past year, if maybe they should be a little more aggressive about locking in their feed needs right now. Did this Friday's action kind of underscore that need or not?
I think so. I think this is going to perk ears and you're going to see some feed coverage being done. Those that have been kind of watching a lethargic market and keep it in mind, Marlon, I mean, we didn't do a whole lot to the corn market because we just had one really nice day on Friday. However, it can change the psyche. You know, and if, especially if you follow a nice Friday up with a decent Monday and then get a good crop progress report on Monday or a supportive crop progress report on Monday afternoon, then you've got something to talk about and you could have a breakout week next week. And it wouldn't take a lot because we've been so tied to this sideways trade. if we can finish May corn more than a nickel higher for the week next week, that would be a technical breakout and open the door for about 20 more cents a rally. So it just doesn't take much to change it. And if we do change it, then do the funds participate? Do we see some liquidation of this massive short position in addition to some of this end user buying? So there's a lot of variables that could come in and really bolster this thing in the coming week or two.
It sounds to me like Argentina is in line to have a pretty good crop this year. However, maybe some bushels are coming off of the top a little bit, maybe some insect problems here late in the season. What do you hear about that?
Yeah, leafhoppers plaguing this crop in a hurry. And the stories that I'm hearing is that the Buenos Aires Grain Exchange is already reduced by, I can't quote it, but 6 or 7 million metric tons from their initial report, and now are down at 50 million versus close to 57 million when they started out. So, you know, you're talking some big reductions there. And we also don't know how much of this same trouble we could see in southern Brazil once they get to a maturity stage that warrants such scrutiny. They're not there yet because, you know, they're just at that stage where some of the corn's going in and just starting to come up. So it's not anything we can really analyze yet, but that could grow into a bigger story if those things can migrate north into the southern portions of Brazil too.
Now, the wheat market had a positive close to wrap up the week, but it was led higher by Chicago, and I thought that was kind of interesting. I thought all the weather concerns were out in the plains for the hard red wheat.
Yeah, I think what you see a lot of times is a lack of knowledge of the specific classes, honestly. I mean, people can't trade, well, I shouldn't say they can't. People often don't trade options in KC because they're just not very liquid. You have a hard time getting a good bid offer or a good bid ask on Minneapolis half the time, let alone options. So really the only markets that are liquid and able to trade is KC and Chicago futures and Chicago options. And people hear wheat and they don't distinguish, they don't differentiate the three classes. And that's the one that has all the volume. So that's the one that attracts all the attention. And so maybe if the Chicago can get something going, that would lead the whole complex out. But yesterday it was KC that was better performing. So they've been kind of trading blows back and forth. But the Chicago has a better chart setup than either of the other two when you look at Minneapolis and KC. We did have enough weakness to have a little downside breakout into what had been an upward trending market. But now we're right back into that range. Hopefully we can propel up from here, but that's something we're going to need. And if Russia keeps bumping their prices, their cash prices, because of their hot and dry situation, then we may have something on our hands.
I know in the past we had always talked about the fact that it looked like cotton may attract a whole bunch more acres this year because of the price structure compared to corn. That looks like it has completely fallen on its face now in the last week. Gosh, what did we take? 10 cents out of that market?
Oh, yeah.
So what's going on with that?
Yeah, just completely obliterated it. I think that the reality is cotton growers grow cotton. They have too much money invested. Some of the landlords require it. They have $1 million cotton picker if they're a smaller operator. They have two or three of those $1 million cotton pickers if they're a bigger operator. They might have a invested interest in the gin. They may have some ownership there. They may have some contract requirements with the gin, even if they don't have ownership in it. So there's a lot more politically local politics that go into the cotton industry. And, you know, it's interesting when you get down into the Delta and Mid-South and around some of the bigger cotton growing regions, how much more you learn about the realities of cotton. The geographic proximities to the gin and the ownership level and how influential some of those owners are on the regional growing decisions and things of that nature. So I just think the acres were going to be there and the market's recognizing it. And I think a lot of people were willing to take a nickel loss rather than a 20 cent loss. So they started hedging up.
And now I want to talk about the 800 pound gorilla in the room. And that was Thursday night. My goodness. I don't know if you were up watching the markets. I happened to be when the news broke that there was some explosions around one of the cities in Iran. Immediately, everybody thought Israel was taking retribution back at Iran after Iran launched that missile attack on Israel a few days ago. but it seemed short-lived. And the crude oil market just immediately just went skyrocketing higher. It went up about $3.50 in just a few minutes. But then by the time the nighttime session got over, it's like cooler heads prevailed and the market gave back everything it had gained, and even then some, by the time it got to the morning. And I just wondered how much influence that has on the other commodities, like the grain markets and that sort of thing. That, you know, that kind of market action just makes your head spin, but it shows just how tenuous these markets are if things really do cut loose out there in the Middle East.
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm going to come at this from a couple different angles, but the first one being I've been watching the crude oil's lack of reaction to these scenarios and dumbfounded. I'm amazed that we didn't shoot oil immediately to $110 a barrel when all of this started getting a little chaotic over there. That's how the market would have reacted in years gone by. I can remember, I don't remember exactly when it happened, but there was a passenger jet that Iran accidentally shot down in their airspace. It's been probably 5 or 6 years ago. And I remember watching the crude oil, and this was in the evening hours, and crude oil was up $7, and then it was up $12, then $15, then $17. And so I'm watching this happen in real time on the quote screen and digging, looking what the heck happened, you know, and hardly anybody had even had time to report it yet. And you never saw that kind of reaction out of any of these things. Yeah, it's odd to see crude jump $3.50, $4 and then right back off. And it's like nothing happened, but you've not seen any of the real volatile swings that you would normally see with crude oil with regards to the Middle East and wars in that region. So I still am waiting for the shoe to drop. And I've been advising clients to, you know, check out your fuel prices, talk to your providers and kind of see what you're looking at, because this may not be the worst price that we have all year. And in fact, even the EIA is predicting higher prices for third and fourth quarter. So, you know, that's something to consider. But if this thing gets real and that shoe does drop, you could be past $100 in a hurry.
That brings me to the question, do you know what the limits are on energies like crude oil? I mean, is there a dollar limit? Is there a percentage limit or anything?
No, there's no limit. There is circuit breakers that can be enforced, but I've only seen it happen once, and that was in April of 20 when we went to -$45 or something. We actually hit the circuit breaker, and the circuit breakers will come in increased frequency if the market continues to be chaotic. So in that particular instance, you know, we started at fairly low numbers, but we were trading at like $35 a barrel or something. And all of a sudden you start falling out and you're down to near zero. You hit a circuit breaker, and it's to do with the volatility over a certain amount of time. They have their algorithmic technique that they use, and then you'll hit the circuit breaker. The trading will stop for a set amount of time before resuming again. And if that volatility hasn't fizzled out and you continue in that directional move with that velocity, it'll hit again, only quicker the second time and the third time and the fourth time. The only time they've halted the trading for anything like that was, in recent memory, was 9/11.
So is that what drove the wheat market higher overnight? Was that kind of riding on the shirt tails of the crude oil then on Thursday night?
Yeah, I think that's what pushed the wheat to the highs that we saw. And that's why we, you know, we couldn't sustain 20 cent higher trade. But that's a heavy transport region for globally traded wheat. And so it's one that we don't really think about, other than I think we saw a pretty good reflection of it when Russia invaded Ukraine and crude oil shot higher. And then here come the wheat, and the rest was history. But those two markets are really vulnerable to what goes on in the Black Sea through the Middle East in that entire region, you know, crossing Turkey into Iran and so on.
And in both cases, crude oil and wheat, well, corn for that matter, too, they will trade Sunday night. So
that's right.
It could be an interesting open Sunday evening, right?
Yeah. I mean, we've got to watch the headlines this weekend and see what's going on over there, because it'll dictate what happens with those energies at 5 o'clock on Sunday and then the grains at 7 o'clock.
Is that Central Time?
Central Time. Sorry about that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we covered so much ground, and Eric, thank you for the time and explaining all this stuff. There's so much to talk about nowadays, a lot going on, but I appreciate it. I hope you have a good weekend, and thanks for the help. That's Eric Ralph. He's with Comstock Investments, and yep, that'll do it for this episode, and that was a good one, so I appreciate that. Again, be sure and share this video with others so we can help get the word out. For producer Breanne Hendrickson, I'm Marlon Bolling. Have a great weekend, and we'll catch you next time on the Comstock Channel.
For a more complete version of the Comstock Report with hedging strategies and trade recommendations, subscribe on our website at comstock.com or reach out to one of our risk management specialists about how we can help you protect your profits. Futures trading involves risk. The risk of loss in trading futures and or options is substantial, and each investor and or trader must consider whether this is a suitable investment. Past performance is not indicative of future results.